Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Brian Lomax.
And I'm Josh Berger. In today's episode, we are going to discuss how players can really take charge of their time after a match to hopefully learn from that experience. We want to be at a point where rather than playing a match, having a certain outcome for a certain reason, and then in the next match or the next tournament having the same thing happen, we want to really try to get to the point of being able to learn from each experience that we have, positive, negative, or otherwise. And there's generally a mix of all of that within each match, within each performance. So in this episode, we'll talk about how tennis players can really try to learn more from their matches, including some specific questions that they can discuss or either think about by themselves, maybe discuss with a parent, maybe discuss with a coach, and we'll discuss, we'll talk about maybe some of the pros and cons of those discussions as well. And then we can talk about how to facilitate some of those either conversations or some of those points of reflection after a match. And what, I think our goal is to give players is some specific things that they can take away from this episode that they can use after a match.
I think after a match, Josh, one of the challenges is learning to ask yourself positive questions. I think there's an art to doing this well. And if we bring it back to our definition of what it means to be competitive, a part of that definition was that you see competition as a means of learning and improvement. So we're always trying to build on what we just experienced so that the next time we go out, we have learned something and we can implement hopefully some updated, improved actions, thoughts, tactics, etc. So we're constantly practicing, even in competition. We're practicing, we're improving, we're learning. So I do think there's an art to asking yourself the right questions. Some good questions here that enable you to move forward and enable you to learn, as opposed to what I would say more commonly do is look for what went wrong, to focus more on the negative aspects of things, to think about your weaknesses. And those things, while they may have some value, you might come out of the debrief process a little deflated about what has happened. And then I think it's also important, Josh, that we emphasize going through this exact same process for wins and great performances. We don't want to take those for granted. And in fact, that's really what we want to produce more of. And I feel like there are times when certain players don't want to necessarily or don't feel the need to debrief on a win. Well, that was expected. And they take that more for granted and more or less assume that it's just going to show up the next time. And I think we want to be more mindful that this is, again, a learning and improvement process. And as many great self-help and philosophical people have said in the past, success leaves clues. But if you're not looking for them, you may not see them. So I think we want to make sure that we do that. And I, like you, Josh, think The goal of today's episode is to provide some questions that are great examples, and I hope that people can take notes and use some of the questions that we provide today as examples for what they want to do. There might be certain questions they really like, etc. And so I think that's really the first step is, what are those questions? What are some positive questions that we can begin with?
Yeah. So I think as we start to think about some specific questions, one exercise that I tend to do with athletes I work with, and I know this is something we've discussed before in the podcast, and Brian, I know you do a variation of this or ask some of these similar questions as well, is something called a 3-2-1 exercise. And this is really simple exercise. You could do this after any sort of performance, after a match, after a tournament as a whole and reflect in that way, or after a practice, really after any sort of a performance, so to speak, you could use this sort of exercise. So what it is you come up with three things that went well, two things that didn't go so well that you want to improve upon, and at least one thing that you learned. And I think this is an important exercise to use because, first of all, we're starting with what went well. And there's always things that we can come up with. Sometimes you might finish a match and feel like nothing at all went well. But is that really the case? Even on a day where maybe you didn't play your best, or a day where maybe you lost to a player that you feel like you should have beaten, there's always things that you can come up with. Maybe it's, I warmed up really well. I did my preparation before the match really well. I had great sportsmanship. And then everything else crumbled from there. But there's always things that we can find. There could be specific moments in a match where you're really proud, where you're proud of how you handled it. Could be certain elements of your game. For instance, a certain stroke. Could be how you manage your time in between points. These are just examples, but really starting with that point of what are some things that you did well out there. The second piece being, what do you want to improve upon? And there should also always be things here. And I think also the phrasing here is important. It's not what did I do poorly or what did I do wrong, but what do I want to improve upon for the future? And then finding at least one thing that we learned. And I think this is important because, as we said in the beginning, we don't want to be repeating the same sorts of habits and patterns if they aren't working for us. So we want to be ideally learning from each experience, whether that's a successful one, a positive one. As you mentioned, Brian, success leaves clues, and we want to be able to learn from things that went really well so that we can hopefully replicate that. And, you know, if things didn't go as well, we want to learn from that as well. So I think that 3-2-1 exercise of, you know, what went well, what didn't go so well, what did we learn, is a great starting point, whether that's an individual reflection or whether that's a reflection that you're doing with somebody else, whether that's a coach or a parent, whatever that may be. I think that can really be a helpful starting point for players.
I agree. And I think, you know, many of the questions I use are similar, Josh, starting off with what did you do well? Sometimes you get one word answers. I served well, I hit my forehand well. And ideally, we should speak in more or write in fuller sentences. When I work with players, sometimes they'll send me a copy of their journal and I have these questions in there, and it'll just be bullets. And, you know, it's good that you did that, but I think we want to turn it more into writing out your thoughts so that you can develop some insight yourself into that. And I have found it helpful to provide some more context, especially on the first two questions. So I phrase them as, what did you do well? And then, what needs work? To me, the what needs work is a nice way of phrasing it and showing that we're always working on something and we're working for that future. We can build on this. So some other details that I add to these questions is, I want you to think about physically, what did you do well? Tactically, how about on the mental emotional side? Were there aspects of your character that were positive? And though, so that gets the player to think a little bit more deeply about the performance rather than maybe some of the obvious surface level things. And then the same applies to what needs work. If we are looking at certain things in a positive way, we could even go a little bit deeper and try to find those clues, because the idea of understanding the positive is, can we replicate it more? Can we repeat this more? So I'll ask a question like, how were you able to accomplish these things? Whatever it is. You know, which is sort of like what Sean Brawley asked Roger Federer right after the 2017 Australian Open. You know, how did you do it? That's a great question, because hopefully the player can come up with some answers to how they were able to do that. Because again, that is about them developing their process, their recipe, their understanding how to create success rather than avoid failure. Another good question, and this is one that I think, one scenario that we didn't bring up yet, is you could do this debrief with yourself. You could do this debrief with a parent, maybe, if you're a junior player, or you could do this debrief with your coach. I've also seen it where we've had two players play against each other, and they help each other through that process. So a good question to even ask the other player or ask of yourself is, you know, what did you do that enabled you to win points and play effectively? What did your training partner do to win points and play effectively? What did your training partner, you know, do well today? What were their strengths? And you get a nice dialogue, especially when the players are training partners and they're cooperative, and there's a lot you can learn from that. And then the last question that I'll ask, because not every match necessarily goes exactly to form from beginning to end, what positive adjustments did you make, if any? Did you have to increase your energy level, or did you change your footwork? Did you change the dynamic of the match, moving closer to the baseline, something like that? And then you could also, lastly, I guess, bring in the different stages of the sets. How'd you handle the beginning? What did you do well there? How did you handle the middle? What happened? Were you on serve? Were you up a break, down a break? How did it go toward the end of the set? How did it go in tiebreakers? And you can, again, put all these questions there. And just gets a little bit of a deeper analysis on the part of the player so that they can begin to understand. Because I think a big part of this question and reflection piece is we want players to develop their coaching voice. And tennis is obviously unique in that you are, in most circumstances, the coach. And if you're not good at that aspect, then it will be harder to make adjustments. And so that's part of the learning is, I should have changed this earlier, or I should have changed this, whatever. Now we can take that and move on to the next match. So I think we have very similar questions, Josh, and I think I like the way they're phrased more in a positive, and we come out of this reflection process with things to do in practice and things to do in future competitions.
Definitely. No, and I like how you added in and you shared some of that detail as well. In particular, some of the specific moments in a match, in first set, second set, and third set tiebreaker, whatever it may be. And also asking, you know, not just what you did well, period, but what did you do well in different aspects of your game? What needs work? What do you want to work on in different aspects of your game? Maybe even what did you learn in different aspects? So I think that is definitely all helpful as well. I think there's other questions, that can be helpful too, right? Most players, with some exceptions, maybe if they're playing more at the national level, but if players are, adult players, junior players are playing more and within their state or within their region, you are likely to play the same person again at some point in the future. So could there be some questions around your opponent, and can you, while it's fresh in your mind, and we can talk through, I think they'll definitely during this episode, we could talk about when to have this when to do this reflection piece, because I don't necessarily think it's a one-size-fits-all approach. But, you know, can you, while it's relatively fresh in your mind, can you think about the opponent and think about, you know, if you were to play this person again, what would you do differently? What were some of their strengths? What were some of their weaknesses? What were they trying to do to you? Similar to the question that you brought up, Brian, when two players can, and maybe this takes place in a college team or a USTA adult team or whatever it may be, but two players that are playing a set or a match against each other, and they can reflect together on their performance and ask each other, you know, what were each of you trying to do and what did you manage to do successfully? I think players can also take note of that about their opponents after a match, because you are likely to encounter this person again in the future. And I think just by adding a bit about that to your reflection, you put yourself in a better position next time around.
Definitely. And I think that's when we look at journaling type things, you're a big fan of Brad Gilbert's Winning Ugly. And he talks about that being a separate journal, the one of about your opponents and understanding their game plan, so that you, the next time that you play them, you at least have some idea. At the junior level, sometimes things can dramatically change from every 6 months or every year. You may see a different player, but still, that's a good idea, even just from the coaching perspective, to analyze opponents and understand. So yes, what would you do differently? If you could play this match again, what would you do differently? I've noticed that that also comes out a lot in some of the other questions, but it's good to restate it in that way, that they would do something differently. So you mentioned the timing of this and that it's not a one size fits all, which I would completely agree with. Certainly reflecting on wins is easier in some ways emotionally. While you might not feel the need to do so much work there, I think we would both emphasize going through the process. So there's less of an emotional barrier to doing it. You brought up the point of while it's still fresh in your mind. One of the things I remember when we were talking about Think Aloud was the reason that Think Aloud was used, I think it was Laura Swettenham was our guest to talk about that, was that they discovered when people tried to talk about their self-talk later, there was a memory decrement, that there was a lot that was lost between the actual moment and then when they tried to talk about it. So that happens. The longer one waits to go through this reflection process, the more that may slip away. Hence, I think the need for really targeted questions and, you know, questions with context so that you can try to dig deeper. And also, I think, Josh, this supports the need to write it out. Writing brings more insight. And sometimes even as you begin writing, you don't know where you're going to end up. And things may just appear. So really, I'm a fan of writing that stuff out. So on the loss side, there can be more of an emotional barrier to doing this. Can be, not always. So what's ideal? I think from a memory decrement perspective, if you are the player, you'd want to get this done within 24 hours. Of the match. If it still stings a lot, maybe that's okay. But what we're really trying to prevent here is that you kind of forget what is happening or what happened out there. So I guess I'll stop there, Josh, just to see if you have thoughts on the timing. Maybe what you have noticed would work best for some of your clients.
I think within 24 hours is a good guideline. I think it's a bit of trial and error that can be helpful here. I find that particularly at the junior level, this conversation, and it's often a conversation between a parent and a child, often takes place too soon. And it often takes place right after a match. And maybe it's in that car ride home, that famous or infamous car ride home, where these conversations tend to take place. And I think that is often, almost always, too soon, right? And I think it makes sense why the conversation does take place then. That's the generally the first time, you know, let's say a player has lost and they're driving home from the tournament, and the parent or parents are, you know, went with them to the match, and they were watching and they have a lot to say. And sometimes that's more on the side of what went wrong, what they should have done differently, that sort of thing.
Even in a win, that can happen.
Definitely. Definitely. Oh, this was 6-3, 6-3. It could have been 6-0, 6-0, right? If you had done this differently. But as we all know, tennis is a very challenging sport, and it's really hard being out there, and a lot easier being on the outside, you know, watching and saying what somebody could have done differently. So I find oftentimes those car ride homes are challenging. I think they can be a point of arguments, certainly, of, you know, of definitely some challenging moments. And I think oftentimes that is too soon to truly reflect, because emotions are still high, especially if a player lost or they didn't play their best. They can be really frustrated. They can feel hurt. So oftentimes I think that's too soon. So it could be later that evening. It could be the next day. I think, yeah, keeping it right around that 24-hour mark is good, because if you're trying to reflect days later, yes, you probably won't remember all the details in the same way. So I think it's, you know, somewhere between, let's say, 2 or 3 hours and that 24-hour mark is ideal. But where exactly you fall in there, I think it all depends. And I think it does take some trial and error. There sometimes can be, you know, somebody tries to reflect and maybe they don't feel ready, or they try to reflect and they don't remember everything. And then it's like, okay, maybe we adjust and we figure out what works best. But I would just, you know, I would caution people from trying to reflect too soon, whether that's a parent and a child, whether that's a coach and a player of any age, even individually. I think you need time to digest whatever happened out there, and then take the time to really go through it and to have some of these structured questions, and be able to write those out for yourself ahead of time and have those written out and planned out, I think is really helpful. So, you know, not doing it too soon, but also not waiting so long that you're struggling to remember. So I think there's a bit of trial and error that can take place to really find what that sweet spot is for you. But it's something that can be scheduled, right? I also find sometimes people forget to really go through that process. They play the match and maybe they don't, especially after a loss, they don't want to reflect on it or think about it. And maybe they never do. So can it be something that's scheduled? Can it be on your calendar, for instance? Can it be, you know, you set a certain time, you set a reminder on your phone. Okay, this is the time. And it doesn't need to take a really long time to reflect on that match. But having it in the calendar, having it planned out, I think can really do a lot to make sure that it happens, and make sure that it happens, in an appropriate amount of time, where you're giving yourself enough time to digest, but not enough time to forget too much about it.
And if this process is going to be with a parent or coach, and it's going to be more of an interactive process where the player hasn't had the opportunity to write it out, I think it's important to stress that the player should go first. Very often we see, especially parents, telling the player what happened. And I know we both know this happens, because we'll meet with them and then they'll say, well, my mom said this, or my dad said that. And they're just completely taking in what their parents said. And the problem with that is they're not analyzing themselves. They're not developing their coaching voice, their coach in their mind. And what's to say their parents are right? They may not be. We don't know the experience. Sometimes the parents are not great players. They're not coaches. So is what they're saying necessarily on point? Hard to say, but we want to make sure that we're giving the players the opportunity to reflect first. And I think coaches, most coaches today, I think, do a good job of that, Josh. You know, when I've been in some three-way conversations with players when I've been at an event, and I've seen coaches turn it over to the player first, because really they're the one out there experiencing it. And as we know, everyone's experience of competition and what happens is unique and is their own. It's not for us to be able to know how a player actually experienced what went on. And if we start, then we're assuming we do know to some degree. So I think that's a caution for parents and coaches is to let the player go first, because they're the one who actually experienced it through their lens of competition and challenge and how they think. That's important. And you brought up that it looks easy from the sidelines. That's another caution, especially for parents, is that this is not easy. I did a talk recently at a 10 and under tournament here in Massachusetts. And I suggested that we as players be able to go to their places of work and stand around them and criticize them all day long and look at their job and how they're doing. And the parents laughed and so forth. And I got my point across, is that very often as parents and coaches, we need to have more empathy for what is going on out there, because just signing up for a tournament or even to play a match takes a lot of guts, especially in today's internet age where your results are generally posted online for everybody to see. Everybody's going to know. So we have to recognize that. And we have to recognize that what they're doing, playing under pressure with this uncertain outcome, is very difficult. And so when things go wrong, it's not like you should have done this. It could be more, well, what was happening? What were you thinking about? What was happening in your mind? How did you experience this? So that we can, if we come at this more with empathy as a coach or a parent, we can make this a more positive conversation. It's not about being judgmental. It's about understanding. And then, okay, how can we learn from that? How could we change something there? Then I think as a player, you also feel more supported rather than judged, rather than maybe, you know, love is conditional on whether I win or lose. That's a pressure point. A lot of these players feel pressure about that. They may feel pressure about how much the parents are spending. A lot of things going on out there that if you're not empathetic with that piece of the equation, you may miss it. You may miss an opportunity to address something that could be taken care of in that moment that will help performance in future competitions.
Definitely, definitely. And I think you're bringing up a really important point here that particularly for junior tennis, there is pressure, and that I think that pressure can come from different places. But I think a lot of it is self-imposed, and players are thinking about the time, the resources, the money, all of it that's being put in from their parents. And they're saying, okay, now I'm supposed to win. I have to win. I should be this UTR because people are telling me I should be at this UTR level. I should have beaten this person. And they have their own goals, right? So then after a match, especially maybe after a disappointing match, all of that's going through their head. And that's tough. That's tough. And I think, you know, one of the big things I try to do, and I think the same is true of you, Brian, is, you know, try to help players find ways to take some of that pressure off. And I know, actually, I think we'll do an episode on that at some point soon. But, there's a lot of pressure out there. Then people put pressure on themselves. People have pressure, you know, from others. And that's a reality. And that's not just true in tennis. That's true across sport. That's true in other areas of life too, of course. But finding ways to take some of that pressure off, I think, is really key. And I think especially as we think about this topic of how to best reflect on a performance, I think that's another question. You know, how did you handle the pressure that was out there? Did you feel like you were putting unnecessary pressure on yourself? Did you feel like you were able to manage it with the tools that you had? You know, were you talking, how were you talking to yourself? Was your self-talk effective in managing that pressure and maybe guiding yourself, coaching yourself? You brought up the coach's voice. Were you able to use your self-talk in a specific, deliberate way? Or was it more that you were listening to more intrusive thoughts that popped into your head, more automatic thoughts, more negative thoughts? So I think these are also things that we can ask ourselves. But I think the point of the pressure and the, you know, understanding, especially if that, as you said, if that's a more interactive experience with a coach, with a parent, you know, understanding that it's not easy out there. And I think that's a message to any parents or coaches that are listening, that almost as a reminder. And I think people understand that, but I think it's worth reminding, you know, that and worth constantly remembering that it is really hard out there. And we see even the best players in the world often mentally have a tough time out there, right? And if it's tough for somebody who's dedicating their life and spending hours and hours and hours a day on their sport, on their craft, it's definitely equally hard or harder for an adult or junior player who's not at the professional level and is not getting that level of training and support on a daily basis to manage some of these situations. So I think that's just a really important thing to constantly come back to.
And I think by looking at pressure, Josh, now we can understand perhaps different performance variables that we can assess. You asked some good questions there. And I think when I use performance variables, which I'll define more as controllable aspects of performance, and I like to ask them in, you know, or phrase them in question form. So even how you perceive pressure, that's a controllable thing. We may not be good at it, but it is controllable. How you respond to the wandering thoughts of your own mind, that's a controllable thing. Again, you may not be good at it. So there could be a number of different performance variables that you find interesting that are helpful to your performance. So maybe, did you do your best with having a challenge mindset today? Did you do your best with focusing on your breathing and relaxation state? And then you can just assess these, say 1 to 10 or 1 to 100, however you choose to do it. But by having these performance variables, now you're focusing in on certain controllable aspects of your performance that you believe are key to your process, key to your recipe, and that you can learn from that. So I think that's even a nice process you can go through with a coach. What are some of my key performance variables? And you can start with, you know, I start everybody off with kind of a generic set of breathing, body language, their coach's voice, enjoyment, being loose and relaxed, things like that. And as we work together, we start to hone in on more specific things. We may have even different ones that are related to skills they're trying to improve, like confidence, maybe motivation, focus, and we create more specific ones around that. But performance variables, it's another good way to reflect afterwards and further everything that we're talking about here, along with any particular goals that you may have set for the day, just simply assessing those on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 to 100, again, can be very, very helpful.
Definitely, definitely. And having specific things, specific variables that directly impact your performance, but are within your control. Right. So, you know, being able to think about what's within your control. And I think this brings me back to what people can do before a match. And we've talked, we actually had a recent episode about how players can prepare for matches. And one of the things that we discussed is players can be setting up intentions and process goals. And those are goals that are within your control. Right. So that might be a goal relating to how you spend time in between points? Are you using your breathing and relaxation strategies and resetting in an effective way? That could be relating to how you prepare for a match. That could be relating to how you're able to handle tough moments in a match. For instance, how do you handle, you know, a double fault? How do you handle a love 30 or love 40 situation? How do you handle moments where you think your opponent cheated? Could be other sorts of goals relating to being aware of your opponent's strengths and weaknesses. Whatever it is, but trying to set up process goals and intentions that are controllable ahead of time. And then I think an important part of the reflection process is, how did we do with those goals? We set those up ahead of time. Okay, can we rate ourselves on those? And I think also, you know, can we give ourselves a reason for that rating, right? And I think that that can be helpful too, because you are, you know, when you're going through a reflection exercise, it's important in the moment, yes, but it's also important and for the future, right? This is something that you can look at in 3 weeks, in a month, in 6 months, and think back about, you know, a particular match. And especially if you keep it in an organized way, whether that's digitally, whether that's in a physical notebook, whatever you choose to use, having something that you can refer back to. So being able to, you know, reflect on what your main goals were for that day. How do you rate yourself? Why as well? And then be able to, have that as a resource that you can look back to. Maybe you play that player again. Maybe you want to, you know, maybe you're feeling nervous or anxious going into a match and you want to think back to a particular match that went really well, where you did a certain aspect of your performance really well. And you can, you know, go back in your journal, go back to a particular match and read through it and be reminded of some of the specifics of that match. But again, that can only happen if you're putting in the work after a match to keep track of it, to note down some of these specific things and answer some of these specific questions that we've talked about.
So I think my final thought on this, Josh, is that it's important to remember competition is a process of learning and improvement, which is why we want to do this reflection process. And I would definitely advise writing this out in full sentences and paragraphs so that you gain insight through that process. And that's, you know, and that may be challenging for some of the younger ages, but I think the more that we promote that at a younger age, the better one gets at it. It's a skill to write and reflect on some of these things, and that will only help the player. We often talk about tennis being a means of training you to be a stronger person, and that's certainly going to help as a skill. So that would be, you know, how I would like to kind of end my thoughts. I think there's been a good discussion, and I think we've come up with a lot of good questions for people to reflect on.
Definitely, definitely. I think the point that I would end on is you can think of this as an investment. And I think you can think of different aspects of your performance in that way. For instance, your warm-up time, right? The stretching that you do, dynamic warm-up, the physical and mental preparation that you do can be viewed as an investment. You're investing that time towards giving yourself a better chance to perform in the way that you want to, towards having a lower chance of injuring yourself. And I think the same is true of your reflection time. It doesn't need to be a tremendous amount of time that we're spending on this, but being consistent about it, having a system, having a process of going through some designated questions, and maybe those change over time, but having a process of reflecting, of being able to think through the match in due time, and, you know, not too soon and not too far from when the match took place, as we talked about, but having that sort of system and putting aside those minutes towards going through this sort of an exercise is definitely an investment of time that pays dividends. So definitely that would be the point that I would end on.
So this is an important topic. Thank you, Josh, for an excellent discussion on this. And thank you all for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you have a moment, please rate and review the podcast so others can find it more easily. Additionally, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes. And you can also check us out on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership, where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.